What's up, wrestling fans? This is the Call Up Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Metal Michael. Thank you for joining me this week. I've got a very, very special guest returning to the podcast for the first time in a minute. And I gotta say, very happy to have back the Queen of NE. Welcome back to the Call Up Wrestling Podcast, Queen.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. It's so nice to be back.
It's very nice to have you back. It's been like something I was hoping would happen eventually, because for people that may not have been listening to the podcast from the beginning, you were really like the first big guest I had on the show. And I say that so that you have a very special place on the show here. And I'm very thankful that at any time you have time to come on the podcast. So thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me. I had so much fun the first time we chatted, and, you know, we talk on Twitter and such, but it's so nice to talk, you know, in person via our microphones.
Yeah. So here's the thing. The last time you and I talked on the podcast was February of 2020. We did the watch along of the Young Bucks versus Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. So if we were going to not talk and podcast for a little while, that's a pretty cool way to leave off for the podcast. And here's the thing, you know, since that time, I mean, if we had a crystal ball and we could look forward in time, can you imagine? Like, a whole lot has happened since the last time you and I spoke.
So much.
You know what? Yeah. So besides all the stuff out there in the world that happened, and it happened and it affected us, it affected pro wrestling. Here we are in 2021. Not only that, but it just so happened that you and I both had something in common. We both had a new addition to our family. So congratulations, yeah. Queen.
And I believe, you.
I know. Well, congratulations, ma'am, on the new baby. And I wanted to, you know, check in, see how the fam's doing. And, you know, so congratulations. Yeah, I think your new baby is about a month older than mine. I think so we're very close.
Close
on
in age. Oh, how cute.
Yeah, I've got a new little princess in the house. And same. Yeah, so congratulations. It's really cool, especially if it's your first kid. You know, that's like, that's all new stuff, but every kid is really special, and you're going to have a lot of fun and it'll make a lot of memories. And is little princess, is she becoming a wrestling fan? Are you seeing any any clues yet?
Oh, well, first, congrats to you too. New babies are the best. And she loves it. She loves all the colors. She watches NXT with me and watches Dynamite before she goes down to bed. So she likes it. She also watches GCW, all those death matches. I'm probably a little bit of a bad mom. I let her watch people break glass tubes over each other's heads.
And you're like, that's the color red.
That's
You're teaching her the color red there. You know, you got that.
I think she's too little to be scarred just yet. So I think it's all right for now.
There you go. You're going to learn a lot watching some GCW. That's
right.
That's like jumping in the deep end there.
It is. Well, listen, you got to get it all. Got to catch them all, like Pokemon. So she's got to see all types.
It won't be long. You'll be taking her to her first show. That's wild. So fun fact. I don't know if you know this. I don't think you've heard this yet, but my wife went into labor on the night one of WrestleMania.
Oh,
this
Lord.
Year. Yes, which is why I was like sure that she was going to be a wrestling fan. Like, she heard WrestleMania going on. She heard the crowd. And she's like, hey, I want to get out here for night two at least. But anyway, baby's healthy. I wish you the best with your new baby.
Thank you.
And speaking of babies, we had a baby boom also.
I know. And like everyone had babies.
I know. I showed you kind of the list I was making because I thought it was kind of funny how all of a sudden lots of wrestlers are having babies. I mean, we got like Renee Paquette and John Moxley had theirs. Hangman Adam Page recently had a new baby. Sarah Rowe is on the list. Her and Rowe from the Viking Raiders. You might remember Sarah Logan. They've got a new baby. Cody and Brandi Rhodes have a new baby. Of course, Seth and Becky Lynch had their baby probably around Christmas time, I believe it was. But still, they make the list because they've got a new bundle of joy. Mm-hmm. And now recently, you've got Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae. They announced they're pregnant, and that's really cool. So lots of babies. I'm sure there's some I missed. I mean,
Ronda Rousey is the only one I thought of today.
Yes, Ronda.
The only one.
That's cool, though. But, you know, so that's just a couple of examples of the baby boom that's going on in pro wrestling.
That COVID, and we got nothing to do.
Yeah, something happened. Something happened during those quarantines. So, you know, but the reason I brought you on is because we're celebrating this really awesome show. And I'm really glad you're here to talk about it. AEW All Out happened this weekend. That's what we're here to discuss. And, you know, what a great show. I honestly, you know, is thinking about it, looking at the criticism online, or at least the reviews, the praise. It just seems like everybody loved this show. And of course, it's not only were the matches great, but also you have so many noteworthy moments and newsworthy happenings going on here with all the big debuts. So let's get into it, Queen. If you are ready to talk All Out, because
I'm ready.
So here's the thing, like, okay, I've got all my notes here. Goodness gracious, there's so much going on. Oh wait, before we talk about All Out, I'm sorry, we got to plug your stuff, Queen.
Oh my goodness.
I know, we almost skipped the plugs. I was so excited about All Out. But here's the thing. So talking about you coming back to podcasting real quick, we talked about you and I doing the watch along of Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Hangman Page. You have come back and started doing episodes of the Queen and Pops Experience. Mm-hmm. For anybody that hasn't heard of that, and you know, I know you and Pops watch these matches together. Is there anything you want to tell people about or where they can find it? What's going on with that?
Sure. So the Queen and Pops Experience comes out every Sunday. So my computer died, so we've been on pause just for a little bit, but we're coming back this weekend. Thank God. So, but if you find me on Twitter at the Queen of Any, and you follow Queen's Court on any of your favorite podcast platforms, I'm on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the whole nine. So you can find that. We watch wrestling matches. We have a lot of banter. We essentially fight the whole time. It's really entertaining. And then we added a new part to our show, which is called Keeping It Real. And that's where we talk about what's happening in the world of professional wrestling. And we kind of break it down, as the name would suggest. And, you know, one of the first things we ended up fighting about was AEW. So it worked out pretty good.
Are you getting Pops into AEW? Was he a fan already? He is a fan. Okay.
Already a fan. Yep. He really likes AEW. You know, what's cool about Pops is he wants them to be the best they could possibly be. So he has a lot of like things that he wants them to do and wants them to embrace and make better about the show. So it's just the top of the top. And, you know, after this pay-per-view, it's kind of hard to argue that they're not. So they have some things to work on, as all companies do. But I mean, really, what a show we just saw.
Yeah, no kidding. And just to say about the Queen and Pops Experience, I hope people check it out. It's cool to have you back in the podcasting world. And, you know, I have a match that I'm going to recommend to you.
Oh, tell me.
No, it's a tease. I'm not going to reveal it yet. I want to. Oh, okay. But it is on this show. It is on All Out. So okay. I want to set it up with a little tease. I know you've already done an episode about you picked some really cool matches. You got Ilya Dragunov versus Walter from NXT UK from last year. That brilliant match.
Oh, so there. Good.
So I'm hoping you do plan doing the rematch as well. That seems fitting. But and then you had Sasha Banks versus Bianca Belair for another episode from WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. That's a great one. So everyone, please check out the Queen and Pops Experience. And I want to give you a little Easter egg here. Something that didn't work out, because for the I believe it was the 1 year anniversary show of my podcast. I think you were still on hiatus. You were still just focusing on the family. And I thought, what would be like a cool thing to do for the Queen? It didn't work out. I reached out to Pops. I reached out to Mort. I believe you were doing forgive me if I mispronounce it, the DYWTSB.
That's right.
Okay. I remember that. And I reached out to the crew And I said, I want to like give a like a special thank you or shout out to the Queen. And Pops was so like, he must have been so upset that he couldn't podcast with you. He didn't get back to me for like a month. So like, that's why it didn't happen. But I was like, Pops,
that's, you know, so hey, sweet.
I wanted to give you a shout out on my anniversary show because it was a year after you and I had done that first episode.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm getting all the sappy stuff out of the way, but okay,
that's so
I appreciate
nice.
You very much, Queen. I just want you to know you're thought of here, and you're like a very a VIP of the Call Up Wrestling podcast.
Oh, I'm honored. Thank you very much.
All right, so I got so excited I almost skipped the plugs. I had to.
Okay, all that's exciting. Yeah.
I know. So let's get into it really quick, because we're going to get into the heat of it really quick, because let's just off the top of my head, this is some of the stuff I wrote down. So we got on this show, CM Punk's first pro wrestling match in 7 years. Mm. We have match of the year contender, Lucha Brothers versus Young Bucks. Yep. Every show on the match was good. And then, oh yeah, we have the debuts of Minoru Suzuki, Ruby Soho, Adam Cole, and Bryan Danielson on this show. Oh my goodness. So that's why I have to ask you this question, because now people are debating on social media, is All Out 2021 the best pay-per-view of all time? So I'm going to go ahead and let you take that question. I hope you've been thinking about it. Where does this pay-per-view stand to you among the greatest pay-per-views ever?
You know, this is a very interesting debate. I've seen a lot of things on the internet since All Out has occurred, and I've seen a lot of takes. I've seen some comparisons to my personal favorite pay-per-view of all time, WrestleMania 17. Here's my problem with that comparison. They're in two totally different eras. The likes of Stone Cold and The Rock and the Hardys and Edge and Christian, and while some of these people are still wrestling and some aren't, it was so different back then. The caliber of big stars, right, in WWE, it was such a different era. It's hard to compare them because so many years have passed, right? And I think that's what I'm seeing. Some WWE hardcore fans are like, how can you even compare the Stone Cold and Rock to what we saw at this pay-per-view? And my take is you can't. I think WrestleMania 17 stands on its own two legs without anything else. And, you know, when you go back and watch that pay-per-view, it's one of the pay-per-views, at least for me, that I can pretty much watch all the way through and not really skip very much because I enjoy it. And that's how I feel about All Out. There was really nothing that I didn't enjoy except for one match that I could have done without. But I don't know. I think it's one of the best pay-per-views in our modern era. And I'll say the modern era as post Women's Revolution. That's what I'm going to say. I haven't had a pay-per-view experience at the level of this or WWE until this one. Like for me, NXT came really close with some of their takeovers in terms of like such a stellar pay-per-view. Like Takeover Brooklyn, I mean, how do you beat that? It's really hard. It's hard to. Match after match, banger after banger. Even the one, you know, in 2019 before COVID took over the world, was so excellent. New Japan has put on some great Wrestle Kingdoms. But to me, I feel like in our modern time, this pay-per-view hit all the boxes, right? You had your beefier matches. You had your fun. You had your surprises and pops. You had the good guys winning. You had your fake outs. You had a steel cage. And you know, you had stuff in there that kind of spoke to every different wrestling fan, I feel like. And that's rare to find these days at the same level of caliber company, right? You know, WWE pay-per-views for me have been missing a lot of things recently. And when AEW came to be a couple years ago, I was like, this is what I'm looking for, you know? And NXT for a long time filled that void of what I was looking for. But now things are very, very different. So I feel like this pay-per-view, in my opinion, is one of the best in recent years. Top to bottom, it's hard to argue that. And I did see, and I'd love to hear your opinion on it, people saying, well, if it wasn't for all the debuts, it wouldn't have been as good. And like, yeah, sure, it's excitement. but also the wrestling was very good. And I think if you take out a couple of those things, it still would have been a solid pay-per-view. Like, people would have enjoyed themselves watching it, but the debuts make it more fun because it changed the landscape of professional wrestling. Even Mick Foley got on Twitter and Facebook and made a video and was like, "You got a problem, WWE." You know, like, things are changing. So yeah, sure, all of that adds so much value to the pay-per-view. And you can't argue that, I don't think. It just is exciting. The actual wrestling we saw match-wise, like if I keep wanting to say DB, but if BD, Bryan Danielson, and, you know, Adam Cole and Ruby and Suzuki didn't come, I still think it could have stood on its own two legs.
I think I agree with you on almost everything that you pointed out there, because you covered a lot of ground there with this discussion of, is this the best pay-per-view ever? And you know what? We may just be feeling the buzz after such a great show. It's been three days since All Out, and we're like, best pay-per-view ever. And here's the thing about, isn't it great that it's so good that people are comparing it to, is it as good as WrestleMania X7? And what's the benefit that WrestleMania X7 has is that that show is 20 years old now, and it stood the test of time over 20 years. People still think fondly of that show. It still stands up as one of the best shows ever. And we can't say that about All Out, because you know what I mean? It's 3 days old, but it's great that it's getting compared to such a great show. I think the difference is that, like, yeah, you have to see how will this show stand up over time. And I do believe, like what you're saying about the matches being great. I mean, if you just look at CM Punk versus Darby Allin being on the show as your peak, if you didn't have those debuts, then people would walk away with a very memorable show. And then the debuts is what really puts it over the top, because you talk about X7. Why is it so special? I think that was the peak of that era of pro wrestling for a lot of people. It was the peak. It was like the biggest, the best, all the big stars. And so it's the peak there. And now look at this. I like what you're saying about it's two different eras. This is something really special right here, because what the debuts mean of, like, Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole and like even Ruby Soho, but the big debuts that we got, and it represents a moment for this era, which is that some of the big stars of WWE are transitioning over to AEW, and this is something new. We've had some people come over. I mean, you know, since AEW started, it started with like Moxley and Jericho, but this feels like a different era where now you're seeing big name WWE stars, their contracts are expiring and they're choosing to come to AEW. And that's a lot, adds to the excitement of, we are going into a new era of AEW. And we're even getting this week, we just got news that Kevin Owens, his contract is going to be coming up at the beginning of next year. And Sami Zayn, and just like, it's wild. We're in a new era where you can choose to go to AEW or vice versa. I mean, just, you know, it's a different time for wrestling fans. It makes it more exciting. And AEW are giving you that option that you can go to a different company and, you know, change the path of your career. So I think that adds to what makes this show so special, because we're going to look at this moment as the moment that we started to see things escalate as far as the star power that AEW has. And, you know, they had stars before, but it's a game changer when you get somebody like Bryan Danielson coming to your company. It people take notice of this. So I love this. I think I agree with you that it's hard to compare those two shows. They're really kind of different in a lot of ways, but it's cool that All Out gets compared to WrestleMania X7 just 3 days after the show.
You know, what I've been saying, you know, and posting a little bit on Twitter is, you know, 2021 is the year that anything in wrestling is possible. That's so special. And that's something that started, I think, with the creation of AEW and the fact that they took this risk, those four EVPs, and said, we're going to do it. They made the first all in, right? So I think that that sent a message that people were looking for something else. And now here we are in 2021, and I, you know, we're looking at the screen and Jon Moxley is in an AEW ring after showing up and winning the GCW championship, fighting Kojima, and like, there comes Minoru Suzuki. Like, what door? There are no doors, I feel like, with AEW, and that's what makes it so exciting. One day your top star could be in an indie promotion, and we bring those people onto Wednesday night television or Friday night television now with Rampage. And the next, he can be in Japan, hopefully when the world is better, fighting, or they can fight here. I just think the possibilities alone make AEW and this pay-per-view that we just had, it's a different level, because we can have things that we couldn't have with WWE, because they collaborate, right? And I think that's what part of what makes people want to come to AEW is the possibilities. Like, Bryan Danielson can fight everyone in AEW, but he could also do some indie stuff if he wanted to. He could do New Japan if he wanted to. Like, there's options, and I think that's what's most exciting about this show that they have on Wednesdays. Anything's possible.
Yes, because we, you know, the forbidden door, as mm-hmm. people like to call it, is a big factor of what makes AEW so exciting, that anybody can show up, like what you're saying. And now it's I even want to include WWE in the forbidden door, because look, when Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole show up on All Out, it's like they've walked through a forbidden door from WWE to AEW.
Yep.
So I'm glad you brought that up too, because that's another thing that makes AEW so exciting and unpredictable, and you just don't know what's going to happen, and the dream matches that we can look forward to. Goodness gracious, Queen. So
it's good stuff.
And there's three guys that were on the roster. I had to look it up. I looked up WrestleMania X7's card, and look, between X7 and All Out, you had Jericho on both shows, you had Christian on both shows, and Paul White was on both shows. So that's pretty cool.
Wild, huh?
All three guys get to say they were on two of the most amazing pay-per-views of all time. So you want to throw that little tidbit in there, but
that's a good one. I like that.
So let's jump right into it. The opening match, Miro versus Eddie Kingston. I think this was a great opener. This is for the TNT Championship, and this is why it's so great. It's because when you put Eddie Kingston out there in the opener, the dude is like arguably one of the most over people in the whole company. And so you bring him out there, and, you know, people were debating, when would we see CM Punk on this show? That's something we're going to get into later. But I think this is great because you bring Eddie Kingston out there. The crowd loves him. I mean, look, the dude just I hope he's making some money right now, because he came up with something that all the fans are loving right now. When he told Miro to redeem these nuts, I mean,
so good.
He's got to be making. I mean, like, CM Punk is selling ice cream bars and T-shirts, but I really hope Miro's up there. I mean, sorry, Eddie Kingston's up there with those T-shirt sales, because, man, I think a lot of fans really love that. In fact, they were chanting it at Miro during this match. So I'm gonna toss it over to you really quick. What's your thoughts on this match? How are you feeling about it?
Oh, it's so fun. I actually wish they had more time to build this story, because I just feel like them both on the mic going at each other is absolutely hilarious. Mm-hmm. Miro is just so casually funny. Like, his humor goes so under the radar, I feel like, because his promos are so serious. But if you hear what he says, it's unbelievable. And then Eddie just is Eddie Kingston. Anybody who knows him from not AEW knows that he's like, he's unreal. So the fact that he's here, I love him and Mox together as a team. And I love when they come back and then they go their separate ways and do things. I mean, it was great. It was a good time. It had a little bit of heelness in there. And it was one of the first matches for Miro that was, you know, a longer match in his title defenses. So that I liked to see. And, you know, he won with heel tactics, as, you know, he should. So that worked out great. And, you know, Kingston, I think, went over just fine. I think he's going to be fine tonight on Dynamite and fine moving forward. I feel like he's one of those guys that even if he loses, you still root for him. So it's all good. I think it was a solid, hot opener to the show. It had some great parts in there. And I kind of like that he didn't win clean this time. Like, all the other times are pretty squashy, you know? And in this one, I feel like kind of cool. He had to resort to some tactics.
I think that's great. I agree, because Miro is, you know, I just hate seeing him lose the championship this soon into having this incredible run. And yeah, you're right. Kingston is so over that it's not like he won't recover from this loss really quickly. It, like you said, he didn't. Miro didn't win clean, so it kind of keeps Eddie protected a little bit. But I have so many thoughts about this, just this opener, just because of the the placement in time we're at, where look at Miro, look at how successful he's become since he's become the Redeemer. Look at how successful Eddie Kingston has become since joining AEW and getting this spotlight in a mainstream company. I'm happy for both guys there. So I wanted to bring up a few things. Let's see here. You know what it is to me? Not just that these are great like success stories for AEW, but what I like about this is that like look at the characters of the Redeemer and Eddie Kingston. They're both great, well-rounded characters that you could put them in any spot on the show and fans would be invested in it. And I think this is something I want to point out a few things that AEW seems to do really well, which is like if you have good characters that your fans can get invested in, it doesn't matter what they do. You're going to be interested to see what they do because you understand the characters. I think that's really special about this is that let's point this out that, you know, no matter where you see Miro or where you see Eddie Kingston on the show, you're interested in what they're going to do. And I appreciate that. That's something really special about what AEW seems to do with their talent. And then the other thing is I want to point out, besides this match, is we talk about chemistry with certain wrestlers and how they work together. I want to point out something that maybe people don't notice on AEW shows, but it's the placement of the referees. And maybe you might feel that the referees don't need to stand out during a wrestling match, but I just want to point out like Bryce Rensburg seems to usually be in an Eddie Kingston match. They go way back before when they were both in the indies. That's really cool. And then you see later on in the Women's Battle Royal when Bryce Rensburg gets that hug with Ruby Soho. That was a moment. Apparently they go way back and that was really cool. And you know, with Young Bucks, you always see Rick Knox in their matches. And so I get used to this. Like there's a little bit of a familiarity to it. There's a little bit of chemistry things like Aubrey Edwards. Yeah, I don't think I want to see a Chris Jericho match without Aubrey Edwards because it seems like she's kind of synonymous with Jericho and his AEW run. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but do you think about stuff like that when you're watching wrestling?
I mean, for me, what's different about AEW referees is they are more present. You pay more attention to them, I feel like, than in other companies. And that can be both a good and a bad thing in some people's opinion. For me, it doesn't bother me. I like the way Aubrey referees. I know it bothers a lot of other people, but I actually think she brings a lot to the match itself. Referees are such an important part. Like, they're the ones that count. They're the ones that make sure that they're not cheating or helps them cheat, right? Depending on what's happening. So I feel like they get a little more showcasedness on AEW, and I think that's cool.
Yeah, I think it's more like for fans that are hardcore, that know the wrestlers' histories, that know, you know, with the Young Bucks and the Rick Knox, they go way back, and like, you know, like Bryce Rensburg and Eddie Kingston, they go way back. That's just like a little bonus. And I don't think the referees go out of their way to take the attention away from the wrestlers.
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. It's just a matter of, for in the back of your mind, if you're thinking about all the elements of what makes a match great, it's kind of cool. It's like they have all come from somewhere where it was independent, where they started from like small shows. And now look at everybody's here on this big stage together and they brought each other up. And that, I love that. I love that about AEW. So that's a little thing. But let's talk about the story of this match really quick. The DDT is what Eddie Kingston was going for. And I love the idea that Miro is this monster, this unstoppable, like, you know, muscular dude, that this heel, and he's got a weak point. He's got a weakness, you know, kind of like that big boss in the video game. You got to find that one weakness. Well, Eddie says, I think it's your neck. And I go all the way back to a couple of weeks ago on Rampage when it was Miro versus Fuego del Sol. And Fuego hits four or five of those tornado DDTs. That's his big move. He hits him on Miro and gets this awesome near fall. And that, so that story kind of set up all the way back to Rampage with Miro and his neck, and the DDT is his big weakness. So when Eddie finally got the DDT in this match, Excalibur goes crazy. I loved it. He goes crazy. He's a DDT. It's like, so that was a great near fall. I love that. I love detailed storytelling when it comes to this kind of stuff. So I appreciate that. Like you said, Miro wins with kind of a heelish tactics. He does a low blow, and Eddie doesn't tap to the game over, I think is what it's called, Miro submission. So, you know, Eddie's got that heart. But yeah, Miro wins with the pump kick. I just wanted to point out, I really appreciate the storytelling here of the way they set up. Like you said, you wish it could have gone on a little, set up a little more. I think they did great adding that Miro might have a weakness with his neck. And I hope more wrestlers will use that as they go into feuds with Miro. We'll see, but I like stuff like that.
Absolutely. I agree. You said it. You said it great. I concur.
Cool. Okay, so now let's get into some goodness here. The next match, Jon Moxley versus Satoshi Kojima from New Japan Pro Wrestling. So, you mentioned GCW earlier. Moxley enters the arena wearing the GCW hoodie. Yeah. I'm sure that got a little pop from you.
It sure did.
Yeah, and he even got some GCW chants as the match started. I believe, I mean, that's what I heard, because I rewatched this match today or yesterday, but I heard some GCW chants. For people that don't know, I guess I didn't see the clip, but I woke up Sunday morning and it was like Moxley's holding the GCW championship.
Yes, it's fantastic.
So do you want to go into that real quick? How did Jon Moxley get the GCW championship from Matt Cardona?
I haven't had a chance to watch the match yet because this crazy weekend of wrestling and GCW shows, I didn't get a chance to finish it. I just actually finished the War Games between Team MDK and Team 440, which was freaking nuts. But I know that Matt Cardona had an open challenge, and Moxley came out disguised, of course, and threw down to win for the spinner belt. Freaking Matt Cardona made it a spinner belt, because of course he did. But we don't do that trash in DCW. So, but it left the storyline to be open a little bit. So we'll kind of see what happens. But I didn't have a chance to watch the whole thing, but I will tell you that he is the new GCW champion. And he also told Nick Gage, who is, you know, the GCW guy, MDK gang, to, you know, if he wants that belt, he knows where to find him. So there's a lot of the cool stuff going on in GCW right now.
Yeah, that's the dream match, isn't it? Jon Moxley versus Nick Gage. And then they created all that buzz with Matt Cardona showing up and taking that death match. So that's a whole nother thing. GCW is killing it right now.
It's hot.
That's really cool. I know this isn't a GCW episode, but I think it needs to be recognized. Like, look, Jon Moxley comes in as the GCW champion. But let me talk about this match really quick, because like I said on my prediction show, anytime somebody from New Japan steps into AEW, that's exciting for me, because I'm a long time, you know, years watching New Japan, even if it's Kojima, who's a legend in his own right. And here's the thing, even if, and this was a decent match, I have no issues with the match. I don't have any big notes on it, because what it was, even though if you look back on this card and you say, well, Kojima versus Moxley may have been the weakest, and I say that in quotations, because it was fine, it was good, but it was all the appetizer to set you up for the main course, which is Jon Moxley wins the match, and we hear Kaza Nina Ray on you know, in the, oh my gosh. So it you know, Excalibur, you know, really took the words, like, everybody's thinking, at least for me, he never thought he would hear that theme song on AEW. And the look on Jon Moxley's face, that, oh my gosh, is Suzuki really here? And when Jon Moxley is kind of like, oh no, like, you, that's telling you something. And I can't imagine for fans that have never seen Suzuki wrestle before, people that aren't familiar with New Japan.
What a treat.
Oh my goodness. So it's wild. It's wild. Suzuki comes out. Of course, Moxley and Suzuki had a really cool match for the U.S. Championship back in Japan before things got crazy. I think that was around the same time you and I last talked was that match New Beginning in one of those, Osaka or whatever. But still, these guys have a really cool history, and their styles really match well with each other because they're both just crazy sons of bitches. That's just how it is. So I love that. And you know what? We could have just got a stare down between Suzuki and Moxley, but we actually got them mixing it up. And, you know, Suzuki and Moxley trade strikes, and then Suzuki ends up hitting his finisher, the Gotch-style pile driver. And not only that, you think, oh, they're setting up for a big match down the road. No, we get this tonight, Queen, on AEW Dynamite.
We do. What a treat for us.
Give me your thoughts. How are you feeling watching this match, when especially when Suzuki comes out?
Look, Kojima is a freaking legend. You know, he's such a talent and staple in New Japan and All Japan wrestling, right? So it's so cool. And while I'm seeing Moxley challenge all these, like, New Japan legends, it kind of makes me think about Randy Orton and, like, the Legend Killer, you know? That's kind of how I feel about, like, what's going on, but, like, so much better because it's New Japan wrestlers. But it was a great match. I had no problems with it. I think Kojima looks great, and it was a really fun time. But the bread and butter was Suzuki coming out. Like, Murder Grandpa is on another level. Like, he is unreal. I love watching him wrestle, the way he sticks his tongue out the side of his mouth and just, like, laughs. You know that line from The Lion King, "I laugh in the face of danger"? That's how I feel about Suzuki, you know?
Sure, yeah.
He's so dynamic and charismatic, and I never thought I'd see him. But, like, I kind of had this, like, little hope, right, in, like, the back of my mind when these forbidden doors keep getting knocked down, and he was on the top of my list of people I want to see come, you know, and fight. But he's like, another caliber of talent, and to have him facing Moxley tonight on AEW on TNT in the United States is freaking wild. I just, not a sentence I thought I'd say, but then again, like I said earlier, 2021 is the year of everything's possible, so we're about to be blessed with this.
I totally agree. So here's the thing, so we're recording this before Dynamite. As soon as we're done, we're going to be watching this. So
yes.
I think that I'm going to release this episode tomorrow morning on Thursday. So we have not seen this glorious rematch of Suzuki versus Moxley yet. We haven't seen what Adam Cole and CM Punk and Bryan Danielson are going to be doing on Dynamite. But it's really cool. This is like a little appetizer. We can get hyped up talking about All Out and going to Dynamite. But I mentioned on my prediction show last week about the Forbidden Door, that we knew Suzuki was coming to America. We knew Will Ospreay's coming to America. There are big potential for some dream matches here. And I still would love to believe that we are going to be building towards Moxley versus Tanahashi down the road for that U.S. championship, possibly for Wrestle Kingdom. So that seems like the end game here. I'm going to keep hoping and manifesting for that to happen. But then Suzuki comes out for Moxley, and I'm like, I don't care what happens next. This was not something I had expected at all, but I'm totally down with that. So very cool. Looking forward to that. Let's see here. So we're going to go on to the next match, Britt Baker versus Chris Statlander, the AEW Women's Championship. You know, the main thing that stood out to me, not only did these women just work hard and give us a good, solid match, was Britt Baker busting out the Panama or Pittsburgh Sunrise, if
That's
you will,
right.
Adam Cole's finisher. So that got me. Of course, for people that watched NXT TakeOver a few weeks ago, you know Adam Cole used the Lockjaw, which is Britt Baker's finisher. He used that in his match, and it's kind of like, okay, you know it's true love when you use each other's finishers.
I know, right?
Yeah, so I really appreciated that. I didn't expect Britt to lose her championship so soon. Feels like she's really getting in her groove as the champion here. And of course, Chris is a great challenger, and she's so strong, and she can do things that other women you really can't do with other women on the roster. So this was a fine match, good match. Britt retains, and you know, I just I enjoyed it, but yeah, I guess I was just kind of, I felt like it was kind of a guarantee that Britt would win. So I didn't get too invested in this match, but it was good. It was good. I have no complaints. So do you have any thoughts on Britt Baker and Chris Statlander?
I was actually really pleased with this match. I knew it was going to go well. I think Chris Statlander is such a talent, and Britt has really come into her own after embracing, you know, being a heel and truly becoming who she is now. It was great. And I agree with you. It was kind of, for me, a lock that she was going to win, mostly because she is in that groove. And, you know, for Statlander, she came back from injury. I just didn't see them putting it on her right now. She hasn't done a lot of talking or a lot of things to kind of build up her character more than like being with the best friends or the new best friends because we're missing Trent. But it was such a solid match. I really was so pleased that this played out the way that it did. Like, for me, there's no doubt that Statlander can be a top contender for the title at any time. And I think, you know, the future is DMD for now.
I agree. I think you want to give Britt Baker good challengers to keep her reign strong. And Chris Statlander is one of the most, what's the word for it, where they're established. They're established in the women's division. She's been there. And so I think that's great. And yeah, like I said, no complaints there. And it's just a matter of. Yeah, Britt Baker is just, it was only a matter of time before she got the championship. And now it doesn't feel like it's run its course yet. Absolutely not. So let's talk about one people may say is the match of the night, a match of the year. That's pretty cool. The Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks for the AEW Tag Team Championships in a steel cage. So I've got a lot to say about this. I'm going to try and keep it quick. Because when you have a match really good like this, you got to really look into it and say, like, so this match I had to rewatch because, especially after everybody on social media starts saying this is a match of the year contender, I need to rewatch it and see if I feel the same way I felt Sunday night. So here's what I noticed watching this match. One, I will say this. I definitely think it stands out as a match of the year contender. I do not disagree with that whatsoever. I'm not here to nitpick what these two teams did. I'm here to explain why, to me, it could be a match of the year contender. So here's the thing. The first half of this match, you might say it's kind of like a typical Young Bucks versus Lucha Brothers match, but I don't think there's anything really typical about what the Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks do when they're in the ring together. So I don't want to sound like I'm dissing either team. It's just that when they are just doing their thing, which is next level already, it's like, you know, I guess you might get comfortable watching these guys do this and forget how amazing it is. It might not register to you because you're seeing it so often on AEW television. And that's what I'm trying to say, is that we have seen these guys do these spectacular moves and tandem offense, and we've gotten used to this style. So what were they going to do to take it to the next level? Well, that next level gets here when Brandon Cutler throws that black bag into the ring, over the cage, and it's got a shoe with thumbtacks glued to the bottom of it. That's when this match turned the corner, and I feel like we're getting into match of the year territory, because then it gets into a bloody war where Penta is just covered in blood. It's just crazy. You had that moment where his face gets stuck. His mask got stuck on the thumbtacks on the shoe. It gets violent. It gets gritty. It gets to where it's like, what can you do to survive in this cage? And that's just one thing of many, because if I wrote down all the cool moments in this match, we'd be here another hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just talking about this match. And I just think it's important to point out that once it got to this point where Penta's bloody and they're ripping the mask off of Phoenix and Penta, and, you know, it's like it's getting personal. It's getting to another level. And I love that. Let's see here. I think I've covered most of it. But that's the thing, is like, can you imagine if you're a tag team in AEW And, you know, they've got the strongest tag team division in all of wrestling, sure, as far as I'm concerned. But can you imagine being a tag team, watching this match backstage, and you're like, oh, my gosh, I think, you know, this is just – you have to recognize these are two of the best teams in the world, and I don't know if anybody else could do it this way, the way the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers did. And after the match is over, and we got new tag team champions, the Lucha Brothers win after a hard-fought war. And, you know, you celebrated that much more because they earned it in a violent, bloody match that, you know, I don't think I can give it. I don't think I can describe it enough to give it the credit it deserves. But I wanted to try. I wanted to try, and I wanted to know where you're at here with this match, as far as not only is it one of your matches of the year, but what were you feeling watching this match?
I think it's definitely one of my matches of the year. And I think the reason why is from entrance to bell and finish, when the Lucha Brothers are holding up the championships as new, I think it hit all the boxes. Like, anybody who's a fan of the Young Bucks and the Lucha Brothers know that this match was going to be chaotic and insane, and you knew Ray was going to jump off the top of the cage. It's a given. It's going to happen. But what I loved about it is the pace of this match, the flow of how they choreographed it and staged, you know, their big moments. It felt really organic. And like when Ray went to the top of the cage to jump, I almost forgot that he was going to do it, you know? Like, I knew it was coming before the match, but then when I'm so invested in the match, I'm like, oh my God, that's right. This guy's definitely jumping off this thing. And it just came so organically and naturally that it felt really good. And, you know, the Lucha Brothers entrance, I just thought was outstanding. And the gear was just fantastic. And Nick couldn't look any more ridiculous. And it just fits so well with their characters. And I thought everything, every spot, every major moment, the flow of the match, it was hard hitting. And you truly did believe that either one of them could come out as champions, and they would have earned it. The Young Bucks would have earned that retain if they had, and the Lucha Brothers certainly earned the victory that they got. And that's what I think makes it super special. What a moment. I don't really think it got any better than that. And to see Penta all bloody, putting his face to the championship and the championship belt being full of blood, it was like, look what I've done with my brother to get this. And now we are at the top of the top of the top, because they are the best tag team division anywhere. So it's pretty awesome. And I'm excited, and I'm really pumped to see like where they're going to go next and who's going to challenge them and where they go from here.
Yeah. You don't realize, like for me, at least when that cage was lifting up after the match, I'm realizing like, wow, my adrenaline and my excitement was so high. Mm-hmm. For this match, that's like, wow, I really need to calm down now, because I was so excited. And so, yeah, it was a bloody war. It was something like kind of what you're saying. They gave it everything they had to win these championships. Both teams did. And that was a great match before Phoenix goes to the top of the cage to do the big epic spot. And so that just added it. I mean, that might have added a star for some people and to their little star ratings. Sure. If you go by that. And and you see afterwards, after the cage raised, and you talk about Penta and the championship, and then I think his family was there, mm-hmm, in the crowd, and he got to hug that little girl, and you could see like the look on her face was like, oh my gosh, what just happened? What did I just watch? And so it's really cool, because they would go through all that to win these championships. And it means that much more. It gives prestige to the AEW Tag Team Championships, because this is how far people would go to win these championships. That's how much that tag team title means, to be at the top of the mountain of this division. And I hope the fans appreciate that that moment, or that idea that's how far these guys would go to win this championship.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You said it great. Or just then. I totally agree with that.
All right. So I just wanted to, you know, I was hoping I would be able to figure out how to say it. But anyway, yeah, absolutely one of the best matches of the year. And like, maybe you want to just put it in its own category, best tag team match of the year, and then you go right to the top. Next, the Women's Casino Battle Royal. I've heard the criticism of the AEW Women's Division. I'm not here to tell you that this is going to change people's minds, but I do think this was a great way for, if anything, at least just showcasing all the talented women you have on the roster. And even if they could just had to cram them all into one match. There's plenty of MVPs here for me. I had Sheeta winning the match. I'm totally okay that she didn't win it. I'm glad Ruby Soho debuted, and that was a really cool way to get her in there. Because, I mean, like, look, we had Anna Jay returning to AEW. You have Jamie Hayter was one of my MVPs of this match. Thunder Rosa, of course, and even Nyla Rose, because she was the big obstacle that everybody had to go through to get to the end of that match. So, and that's just a couple. That's not even, I mean, because there's so many talented women in this match. But I want to point that out that, okay, so Ruby Soho debuts in AEW and wins the Battle Royal. And she gets that wholesome moment where she sees Bryce. She gives him that hug. And what I love about this is the idea. You might notice a pattern, Queen. I get into the next level deep thoughts when it comes to wrestling. Here's the thing. I imagine you saw the promos that Ruby Soho had on her social media, where it was titled The Runaway. You know, she was trying to get somewhere and she was running away from whatever. But the idea of the runaway is they're leaving somewhere and looking for a new home or a destination. And her destination wasn't revealed on those promos. But if you filled in the blanks, it would spell Chicago on those those promos. But I thought that was really cool because think about it. I mean, Ruby, it wouldn't say she ran away from WWE. She was released and she was looking for that next destination, and that it was AEW that was her destination. And in one night, AEW, in my opinion, did more to establish Ruby Soho as something special than years of her being in the Riot Squad. And her matches, you know, I'm not saying she didn't have a decent run in WWE, but in my opinion, she went to another level here with this Battle Royal, winning the title shot. And I don't know, what do you think about all that? How do you feel about Ruby going from WWE to AEW?
I mean, I loved her in the Riot Squad. I felt badly that they didn't seem to know what to do with her and Sarah Logan and Liv. They could have been so much more than they were. She's a great leader in that little squad. And there were some really cool moments with her. And I think we're going to get some of that here, which is, I think, even better. And you can tell with the emotion on her face as she made her debut here in as the Joker. It means a lot to her and she's excited. And that makes us excited, you know? For me, you know, the women's division is complicated. I watching this Battle Royal, which I think is actually their best one they've ever done.
And yeah, I think 100% agree.
It was so good. They had great moments and spots and it flowed really nice. But I also love that kind of thing. But I think, you know, you're looking at this and going, oh my God, there's so many talented women. Like, why aren't we showcasing them more? Like, outside the title picture, we don't really get any women's stories. And like, yeah, you know, but we have all these programs. We have, you know, Dark and Dark Elevation, but like, you know, not everyone has time to watch all of that. So when you're watching on Wednesday nights, like, I want to see these women being showcased just as much as they showcase all the men. So that's like disappointing for me. And I was so excited to watch this and go, oh my God, like, maybe we can turn the corner a little bit now that we have some things going and returns, you know, Anna Jay and stuff. But I don't know. It's my real only sore spot with AEW that I have. I just wish there had been better treated since their inception. But I'm hoping, you know, for the future we have that change.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm taking like the not popular stance, which is you often hear on social media, which is it's getting better. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if that's something people want to hear when it comes to the women's division. But just like you said, this is the best battle royal that the women have had in AEW. And if we continue to see this progression year after year where it gets better and better, at least we can say that there's progress being made with the women's division. You see the steps they're taking, the roster they're putting together. And I'm totally with you that there's several shows that they could be focused on and given the spotlight and given more stories. I don't disagree with you at all there. There's going to get to a point where, you know, hopefully they keep signing these excellent women. I mean, like Sky Blue, for an example, she seems like somebody that would be great coming up the AEW roster. And, you know, I hope they continue to get these women to where they have no choice but to say, like, yeah, we've got so many great women. Let's give them more stories. I hope they do. So I'm not here to say that the women's division is all good to go, but there's progress there. And I think it's cool that they brought in Ruby Soho and she got the big win. I think it's a wholesome story. I think that was my most wholesome moment of the night, was Ruby winning that. And like you said, seeing the emotion on her face. So yeah, I better not, like I said, it's not that it's the women's division couldn't be better, but I do see some progress. And I don't know if that's enough for fans of women's wrestling, that progress is just progress. It's not, you know, there's more you can do.
Absolutely. There's always more. And I think, you know, progress is a good thing, but it needs to be continued. I think that's my biggest, you know, like, hey, we got to make sure that this is moving forward in a positive direction.
Yeah. And supposedly, you know, AEW, one of their biggest strengths is that they listen to what the fans are saying, and let's keep putting pressure on them to give those women those stories. And hopefully they're listening. And like CM Punk said, we don't have to be the voice of the voiceless anymore, because AEW is listening. So let's keep it going, because you've got more eyes on AEW than ever. So let's get those women out there and let them show what they can do. And I think they've got plenty of great women on that roster that can carry some good stories. So
agreed.
All right. So here we go. We're going into Jericho versus MJF, the final fight. Oh, wow. So if Jericho loses, he has to go retire from wrestling, go sit at the commentary desk, and he will not wrestle in AEW ever again. So, you know, look, here's the thing. Going into this match, it does have high stakes to it, because you realize if Jericho loses, he can't wrestle anymore. That's kind of high stakes for Jericho. And then you've got MJF, the guy that has beating him. He's beaten him time and time again, three different occasions. So there's a psychological advantage that MJF has. You've got, you know, some similarities between MJF and Jericho that, you know, they're both excellent promos, and Jericho in his day and time was one of the best wrestlers coming up. So there's a lot of little details here that I appreciate about this. So it's interesting, because I don't know. I mean, Jericho is older, and I felt like, I'll say I enjoyed this match. I thought it got better as it went along, and I think Jericho stepped up, because considering he's older and he's kind of slowing down, I think he brought it. I think he was motivated to show people that he can still put on a great match. And maybe you feel like it was too complicated. I could see why people would say that about the booking of this match, but I'm going to turn it over to you, Queen. Do you think, did you enjoy this match, or did they overdo it?
It was fine. I didn't love this one. I was a little disappointed with how they chose to do these five labors. Also, to me, it was a repeat of the Cody MJF thing. He did that. He had to do these things in order to get to MJF. And now we're doing it again with Jericho, which is fine. You can repeat stories, and like, I get why. But I really hoped that the final labor was actually going to be it all out. We already saw this match. We just saw it again with a stipulation that he would retire, which is supposed to get you more invested. But for me, it was kind of like, well, I've already saw this, and I'm kind of over the storyline of them two by now. I think they're both great in their own right, of course. And Jericho's one of the greatest of all time. But for me, I was like, I'm kind of done with this. But the match I thought was fine. It had some good spots. It had some cool parts. The little fake out ending was dope. And, you know, you can't let Jericho retire. So I kind of feel like that wasn't going to happen.
So, yeah, I agree with you. I picked Jericho to win this. Because he's probably going to go off and do like a tour with his rock band. And
definitely.
But that doesn't mean he's not going to come back and have like some big matches. He still could do that. I mean, considering all the people they're bringing in now, you know, sure. Jericho sees the money there. Like he wants to get in there. So anyway, I didn't really think Jericho was going to lose, but I wasn't going to. I mean, when you think about it from a, like a realistic point of view, you could see it like maybe MJF wins. Sure. Maybe Jericho is done and maybe this is just going to be his final match. So it gave me an element of like interest in this, that the whatever the finish is, it has like big stakes to it. And I want to point out something, because it doesn't seem like we get MJF. I want to point out something, that we do get MJF a lot on Dynamite, on Rampage, on TV. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. I don't think we really get to see him wrestle to his best until it gets to the pay-per-view. And sure. He always seems to steal the show almost with his wrestling ability. We're so used to knowing how great a heel he is and how great a talker he is. But if you've never seen MJF wrestle on an AEW pay-per-view, whether it's Jungle Boy or like this example with Jericho, there's several that come to mind that I think people may not know how good MJF really is until you see him on a pay-per-view. I think they keep that. They really do a good job of keeping that for the pay-per-view to give you that full experience. So I don't think he gets enough credit for being a really talented wrestler in ring.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he definitely can wrestle and he's got great talent. I just think, you know, he's being utilized more for his mouth than anything else right now. And then, you know, he shows up at the pay-per-view, and that's not necessarily a bad thing for his character. So I'm kind of okay with that, actually.
Okay, here is my glaring nitpick of this match. And I don't have a lot of negatives to say about this show at all. But this is my only thing. Jericho is in his if I lose, I retire. And you know what? This was supposed to be booked as a standard wrestling match. And Jericho at one point picks up something out of the crowd, like something out of the whatever. I don't know what it was called, but it was this big old bulky post thing. And he just basically right in front. There was no distracting the ref or anything. He just basically bonks MJF with. He just throws it at MJF and hits him in the head with it. And it was kind of like, I gotta imagine that was not planned ahead of time, because you don't do that in front of the referee and expect not to get disqualified. I don't see, in my mind, using logic, which maybe I shouldn't be using in pro wrestling sometimes, but from a logic standpoint, Jericho, why would you take a chance of being disqualified in this match? Because what happened? Somebody used Floyd the bat. That was like a distraction thing. Like you don't, you know, that was behind the ref where the ref couldn't see it. And they were playing this like it was a traditional wrestling match where you don't want to get caught using a weapon. So forgive me if I take a detour here and say, I wish Jericho hadn't have done this, where it, you know, maybe Aubrey Edwards was like checking her nails or something. I really doubt it, but I'm just saying. It took me out of the match for a moment, and I just don't get it. You know, I'm trying to forgive it. I'm trying to explain it. Like, okay, this is a big deal. You know, if Jericho loses, he has to retire. So maybe Aubrey is giving them a little space to get a little wacky with it, you know, kind of like New Japan style, like Red Shoe style. You know, you can get away with some extra stuff. You're not going to get disqualified right away. So I just had to point that out. This was like my only nitpick of an entire show. Like, so that's not bad overall, but still took me out of the match for a moment. So anyway, I had to point that out.
That's all good. I hear you. I understand. They give a lot of leeway in AEW. I feel like ref's discretion is used quite a bit.
All right. So the finish is like extra dramatic. They built this up for extra drama. You know, MJF looks like he's won. Jericho's got his leg on the ropes. We got a second referee comes out there, says, look, his leg was on the ropes. Yep. Okay. Restart the match. Jericho wins. Happy ending. MJF got all these wins over Jericho. It gave us some entertaining matches thanks to like MJF and the Labors, and getting like Nick Gage on AEW television. Jericho really stepped up. And, you know, if you look back on it, like if this was his retirement tour, and he did end up retiring, you would have said he put on some memorable moments there. So Jericho wins. Happy ending for the Inner Circle. And that's it. So not a bad match at all. In fact, I think it got better as it went along. I just wish that we didn't have that one detour that took me out of it momentarily. But I think Jericho stepped up on this match. It, you know, like he was wrestling, like his career depended on it. So that's about all I got to say about that one there, Queen, because the next one, goodness gracious, I'm glad we saved a little bit of time for this. CM Punk versus Darby Allin. Hey, it's just CM Punk's return to wrestling in 7 years versus Darby Allin, one of the big stars, up and coming stars of AEW. So goodness gracious, I just I have so much I want to discuss about it. I'm trying to kind of set myself up really quick because one thing I want to say is, you know, we talked about where would they put this match on the show? Would it be the main event? Would it open the show? Would the Chicago crowd chant CM Punk until they got him? But you know what I really love about this is that AEW had the confidence in their show, in their lineup, that they could give you a great show all the way through and then give you CM Punk towards the end. That they were so confident that the fans would be entertained that they wouldn't be chanting CM Punk. And I give credit to whoever laid out this show. If it was Tony Khan, then credit to you, sir, because they had so much confidence they would give us a great show all the way to that point that you could still anticipate CM Punk's return match towards the end of the show. So I think that's something that really stands out to me. Now, CM Punk comes out for his return match, and he has to, not only is he coming back after 7 years, he's coming into Chicago, of all places, his home crowd. And now he has to follow some of the greatest matches we've seen all year, especially like, you know, just a solid night of wrestling where the fans are so happy, so entertained. I mean, I got to imagine there's a little bit of pressure there on CM Punk, but I don't, before I go off on all my rants and all my thoughts, I'm going to turn it over to you, Queen. What are your thoughts of CM Punk coming back into wrestling and his match with Darby Allin?
I mean, it was great. It was great. He didn't look like he missed 7 years, you know? Yeah. I thought that was really cool. You know, he's an older Punk for sure, but he's still CM Punk. And that I think is awesome. He's just a different version these days. And how special for us that we got to watch that, you know, not something I thought I'd ever see again. Never thought he'd come back, but he got so excited about AEW that he came back, you know, and they've been talking to him for 2 years. And I was at All Out and All Out Weekend, StarCast Weekend, and I got to listen to CM Punk give his interview, and I got to meet him. And, you know, I was just thinking, like, wow, like, it's so cool he's here, and he was so gracious and funny. And then thinking to myself, damn, like, will I ever see him wrestle again? Because I was always a Punk girl. I loved him since the beginning, and I was devastated when he retired. But, like, I totally got why, and hearing him talk about it, like, it makes a lot of sense, you know, for him. But to see him in the ring again, it was really special. It was a big moment. And I thought it was a great match. A lot of energy. He can hang, man. And that's, like, so dope because, you know, Darby's super fast and agile and, you know, really kind of wondering how it was going to work. But honestly, I think Punk looked great, but I think Darby looked like a complete star, you know, hanging with CM Punk and, like, doing so well. I mean, how cool for him too, to sit there, you know, across from him in the ring and know that you're going to fight like someone you grew up watching. Like, that must be such a cool moment for him. I just thought it was great. He'll be fine. The loss doesn't mean anything for him, but I thought, you know, it was such a great match, and what a way to welcome CM Punk back to the ring. And, you know, how exciting to see what he's going to do next.
Yeah. You know, there's a way they can book it to where, you know, Darby actually gains something from losing this match, or at least sharing the ring with CM Punk. And there's going to be, like, in the story of CM Punk in wrestling, or the story of CM Punk in AEW, Darby Allin's going to be a very important player in that. And I definitely want to give Darby credit for, like, it's not just CM Punk having a great match. Darby was the one that, you know, kept up and pushed the pace and made CM Punk, like, wonder if, you know, he could still be the best in the world. That was the story, and I really appreciate that. I think whoever planned this match out, whoever it was, the producers between CM Punk and Darby, it feels like every second of this match was calculated to where, you know, every moment of the match mattered. Everything was calculated to be like the maximum amount of what you could get out of CM Punk versus Darby Allin. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and let you know right now. I mean, you had to be wondering in the back of your mind. I set up the tease at the beginning of the episode. I think this match deserves a watch along, Queen.
Okay.
So this is my nomination. CM Punk versus Darby Allin. I want to hear you cover this match with Pops on the Queen and Pops Experience.
Okay, well, your request shall be granted. I will message my other half there and let them know.
I think it's a very honorable recommendation because I'm watching this match and I'm just like, I want to do a watch along to this match. I'm like, I mean, like, I'm going to give it to Queen, but I could definitely do a watch along because there's so much going on in this match. And like the final stretch of it was brilliant. I mean, like, there was that moment where Punk hit the first GTS on Darby. And it was so much impact. He fell through the ropes to where Darby couldn't be pinned. That was brilliant. There was the moment with the coffin drop where CM Punk just sits up off the mat and Darby crashes and burns. Mm-hmm. There's so many great moments here. I'm not like, I didn't write down every single one, but I got to say, like, this match had me going. And especially at the end, like, I think Darby did a roll up. Punk counters it into a GTS, but Darby blocks it and goes into that mousetrap, whatever they call it, pinning combination, which he has beat many people with that pinning combination, which Punk is like, it's a crazy, crazy near fall. And here's something that's going to be interesting, Queen, for you as a new mama. I was trying to be quiet. Watching this match, the baby was sleeping and I was like gritting my teeth and I was so fired up. I sometimes you just want to jump off the couch or jump out of your chair. Well, this was me like I was like trying to be quiet and trying to suppress it. I still woke up the baby getting excited about this match. So I think the final stretch was great. I give credit to Darby for being a part of that.
Oh,
and
then, yeah.
Of course, at the end, it's so like, awesome, you know, Punk extends his hand, shakes Darby's hand, and Darby with his wrestling dad Sting, kind of, you know, he like leans on Sting and they go off, and that there's so many possibilities too going forward. I'm not going to go into crazy fantasy booking, but this absolutely lived up to the hype for me, CM Punk versus Darby, and I'm actually excited to relive it again through your eyes and through your show with the Queen of Pops Experience when it comes up to that, the point when the computer comes back into your life.
I know, my stupid computer. But yeah, we'll be back and I will add that to the list for sure.
All right, so let's jump. We've got a few more things to cover. Paul White versus QT Marshall. I'll say this. I think it was short and sweet. I don't think it really... I don't have any problems with it. I think QT sold everything that Paul White did. It was a little over the top, kind of putting Paul White over. It's still like a, you know, like he still got it. But that's about it. You know, I expected Paul White to win, and he did. And he gave the fans a lot of live fans in the live crowd a chance to go to the restroom or go to the concession stand or just enjoy Paul White being in a wrestling ring one more time. But gosh, I guess you might be feeling differently. So, Queen, what's going on? What are you thinking about with this match?
Listen, every show has a break match. This is definitely it. I get why. To me, it didn't fit with the rest of the show. If anything, it should have been on the buy-in. I would have taken that 10-man tag better than this. in this spot before the main event. I don't find any value in it, really. I don't really think it was necessary. Sure, we all want to see QT Marshall lose. Cool. But I don't know. For me, it just wasn't super exciting, and it kind of felt like a little bit of a waste of a spot, just in my opinion. Listen, it's cool that he wants to get in the ring again. I get it. But I think he had so much more value for commentary purposes and backstage stuff that, to me, it was just like, oh, really? Why? But why do we have to do this? And to me, it could have been a better story. They could have built it more to make it necessary for him to come in. Like, just defending Tony Schiavone to me isn't just enough to be on the biggest pay-per-view of the year, other than Double or Nothing. So I don't know. It just was kind of confusing, and I was bored. I could have done without it, but it served its purpose. It had some, spots in it that were, little nostalgia pops, and that's cool. But to me, it was just a waste of time. All the other matches were so much more dynamic and meant something storyline wise. Like, this is just like a one off and over, and I didn't understand why it was happening. So this is the only thing I really didn't like about the show.
Okay. From what I'm hearing, and I'm going to take it to like where I go with that, which is, considering there's so many great people in AEW on the roster, that maybe you're feeling like you didn't have to have this match on the pay-per-view, and it kind of could have been somebody else that could have had a banger of a match on this show to add to how great this show was. So I could totally understand that. Like you said, like, Jungle Boy is on the pre-show, and we all know that he's got so much momentum going into the show, is like, just popularity wise and talent wise. Sure. From that aspect, if you want to say that you could have put so many different people in this spot on this show, then I 100% agree with you. And I hate to say that it's the purpose was for people to get out of their seats for a minute, stretch their legs. Before the final stretch of the show. And I was kind of in the same boat. Because even I'm at home in the living room, and I didn't want to get up and go to the bathroom. I was enjoying the show so much. That's something I don't say very often about, like, I don't want to leave the room. Like, I had to get ready for work the next day, and I'm just like, when am I going to get up and get my stuff together for work? And like, I didn't want to get up. So that was the opportunity. So if that's the case, it served its purpose. But yes, I agree with you. It could have been somebody else if you really want to just keep those heavy hitters coming. So, okay, let's get into the main, Kenny Omega versus Christian. We saw him on Rampage. Christian wins the Impact Championship. He's the first person to pin Kenny Omega in singles competition this year, as far as I'm concerned, in what was a fantastically well-executed match. This one, I had predictions that it would be better, because it's on the pay-per-view and it's the main event, because you think, it's got to be better because it's Kenny Omega in the main event with Christian. And this was a good match. I have no complaints about it. Maybe you do, but I'm just saying that I enjoyed this match. I don't, when it comes to Kenny Omega, I may be biased a little bit, but he is that good that even when he has just a good match, it always has my attention. I think Christian brought it and held his own. The big spot that stood out to me here was when they were teasing that table bump towards the end. And I don't know if you remember, but Christian does a spear. So kind of a little nod to his brother Edge there. It does a spear, spears Kenny Omega onto the table. But the way Christian landed on that table was so gnarly, because the table leg is standing up. It looks like he landed right on the table leg, where it would go right into his chest, into his ribs. That was gnarly. And I have no complaints about this match. In fact, I would compare it to that Moxley Kojima angle, which is, this is actually, even though this is the main event, this is your appetizer for what's about to happen next.
Sure.
So if that's the case, it didn't need to be the match of the night. We already got the Young Bucks versus Lucha Brothers. You don't have to try and top it. You've already got that nailed, like, if your pay-per-view checklist. So for me, this didn't have to be the match of the night. It was totally fine. I think Christian is totally capable of having a great match. And it's like the conclusion of that storyline of Christian wanting to prove that he still belongs. And he got the win over Kenny Omega. He still walks out of this match as the Impact World Champion. So, okay, yeah, I don't feel like I lose anything. Like Christian loses anything. It just like, this is the storyline. This is where it concludes with the main event. Christian got to main event a pay-per-view with the best bout machine. That's pretty cool in 2021.
Absolutely. Kenny Omega is my favorite wrestler. So for me, it's been super fun to see him in this championship position, being cleaner Kenny with a twist. You know, he's got a different personality, but it's still kind of that vibe. And, you know, Christian gave him his first loss in 18 months. That says a lot. I think this match was a great match. I think their match for the Impact title was a little bit better than this one, but they're both very solid matches. But really, it's the champion holding that championship belt for what's to come. And boy, how exciting was the end of this. You know, you covered the match so well. I don't really have too many things to add to it other than it was very solid and Christian can go. And he's going to have fun now, I think, going with Impact and doing his title defenses there. I think that's awesome for him. And you know, and Kenny and the Elite have some business to handle. And for me, great match. Loved it. I love that Kenny is our champion. The dude that takes the belt off Kenny is going to be a huge deal. So that to me is a lot of the importance of Kenny's reign, because whoever does take it is the guy. So that's exciting. But for me, it was the aftermath, you know, seeing our friend rise from the dead, so to speak. And, you know, like to me, I think at the end of this pay-per-view and after it's over, not to jump ahead too far, but just I'm thinking about it like this pay-per-view gave us CM Punk's first match in 7 years. It gave us reinvigoration in the women's division with Ruby Soho. We have Suzuki. And then you're looking at this ending match. Your champion is dominant, but still had to fight to win. It wasn't like a squash or anything. It was a solid wrestling match, you know? And then the end comes and you have hottest free agent signing with AEW and Adam Cole. And then you have Bryan Danielson. It's just like, how do you even fathom all of that on one show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we are about to get into that. And I think the one last thing I can say about Kenny versus Christian is that a kind of like similar to the Britt Baker and Chris Statlander match earlier, it was kind of felt like in the back of my mind, I knew Kenny was going to win. Mm-hmm. And then the reports are coming out that it now Bryan Danielson looks like he's going to debut on this pay-per-view. So now you're probably in the back of your mind thinking like, oh my gosh, are we going to see Bryan Danielson at the end of the pay-per-view? And this is what's really cool is we got the swerve. We got the swerve of Kenny Omega on the mic saying everyone that could be a contender, they're either retired or they're already dead, and the lights go out and then Adam Cole comes out. That's the swerve for me. I didn't expect Adam Cole to come out yet. I didn't expect him to debut it all out. There was nobody talking about it. There were no spoilers that Adam Cole would come out. So I was swerved a little bit. Oh, what's Adam Cole going to do? Is he going to go against the Elite? We find out, no. He super kicks Jungle Boy and rejoins the Elite. And hot damn, that's not bad. For if that was the way they ended the show, that would have been a totally satisfying ending. And you almost forget that you were thinking about Bryan Danielson showing up in the AEW. So, and by the way, if Adam Cole super kicking Jungle Boy leads to that being his first match, well, hot damn, there you go. I'm all good with that too. Goodness gracious. But that was the swerve. And then you think, look, the Elite on top. No, here comes Bryan Danielson at the end, like we all were hoping for. And he gets to drop the Shining Wizard on Nick Jackson, and the crowd got to celebrate and do the yes chants. And what an incredible moment, it's like Adam Cole was a bonus in a lot of ways. But then Bryan Danielson, the one that everybody was like, could it happen? You know, will it happen? Even though you hear reports of it, you don't believe it until you see it. And we saw it. And by the way, that theme song he's got, I've been playing that every day, by the way, since that came out. It's a kind of like a remix of his old WWE song, but it's kind of hip and modern. I love that. I don't know how you're feeling about it. I actually downloaded it. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple. It's called Born for Greatness. If anybody's looking for it, you could type in Bryan Danielson and it would come up. So that's all you need to know. But goodness gracious, Queen, I know. It's like not only did you get a great show, but you also get something that you want to see what happens next. And we're about to go, like after we get done recording, we're going to watch AEW Dynamite, which now has Adam Cole, like you said, Minoru Suzuki, Bryan Danielson, CM Punk. It's like, I don't, my wrestling heart is so full of joy when it comes to like wrestling is exciting again. And AEW's done this time after time, and they keep topping themselves with getting you excited for what's next. That's why I love AEW so much.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I you know, I lost a little bit of love for WWE a while ago, and NXT kind of gave me that. And then when AEW came, I was like, oh man, like this is what I've been looking for. You know, as you know, as a New Japan fan yourself, watching New Japan and the indies and stuff, you know, these guys started this revolution in wrestling, and last Sunday, man, they changed the whole landscape of wrestling. You know, it's a viable company. You know, it just like think about what it started. Everyone called it the t-shirt company, right? T-shirt company, yeah. To this.
Sure.
I was just wild, you know, and it's exciting and it's fresh, and, you know, everyone's coming there or wants to be there. When you have people saying, you know, thank God, like, for this other option, I'm going to, like, revitalize my career or try something new. And, like, I'm going to come here because I'm excited to come here. I want to wrestle here because of the roster and the atmosphere and the fan base. Like, man, that's, like, so awesome. And what a time to be a wrestling fan, you know?
Yeah, so it's kind of like validation in a lot of ways of, like, we love this company. We've been with them since day one.
That's right.
We've seen them rise. We've seen them give us moment after moment that we loved as fans. And we keep thinking, how can it get better than this? You know, how many times have you watched an AEW pay-per-view and you're like, that was a great show, and then they still continue to go on? And I want to point out something really quick. This is my final thought before we wrap this up, Queen, because I mentioned on the format that there's a quote from Nick Khan from the WWE when they're releasing all these wrestlers, and it's like, maybe we'll give them some more talent. And he's referring to AEW, and that sounds kind of like, not sarcastic, not what the word is for it, but something like, he doesn't care. Mm-hmm. You know, AEW can have all these guys. We don't need them. But you know what I'm thinking? Like, I thought deeper about it with the comment of, we're going to give them wrestlers. In a way, they have. They released Andrade. They released Malakai Black. They've several of these wrestlers that they've released have come, like Miro, or, like, you know, there's several examples of people that are finding a new life in AEW. And here's my thought, because WWE is not going away. For the people that think that AEW is going to run WWE out of business, that's not going to be the case. But let me tell you what I think about with that comment. We're going to give them some talent. Yes, Daniel Bryan chose to be in AEW. His contract ran out. He chose to go to AEW. Same thing with Adam Cole, talking about give them talent. I'm thinking like this. Like you said, we're not as excited as we used to be about WWE. It's not inspiring. It's not exciting as it used to be. And those great moments are very few and far between now. So here's my thought is, like, Yes, if you these wrestlers go from WWE to AEW, and AEW becomes the most exciting product for fans, and fans are excited about pro wrestling, that's good for WWE. Because for most people, like, I don't know about you, but for me, I could skip Raw and not feel bad or feel like I got to check it out. Or if I miss SmackDown, I don't feel that bad. I don't feel like I've missed much, you know. And so, but there's a, imagine if WWE was the only game in town and AEW wasn't around and they were giving us this product that they're giving us now. And I believe there'd be a lot of fans that would tune out, that would just leave wrestling altogether and just say, I'm done, because this isn't for me anymore. But now you have that alternative in AEW, which does give fans excitement. And I think that will bleed over into WWE, where people will be like, I still like wrestling, so I'll check out Raw on Monday night because I love Dynamite on Wednesdays. I hope that makes sense the way I explain it. But that's my final thought, is like, if WWE loses these big name wrestlers, like a Kevin Owens or a Sami Zayn or whoever comes up with their contracts, I think this is good for the business in general. It's excitement. It's something fresh. It's something new. And it may actually keep some fans still watching WWE, you know, just because they like wrestling in general, because they love AEW.
Yeah, I mean, it might. I can say it, you know, to simply wrap up what you're saying, because you said it great. I think that you know, AEW is best for business. It just is across the board, no matter what company it is. Having viable competition should inspire greatness elsewhere. So that's my hope for it.
Sure. And we've discussed it over this show. I loved the way the conversation went and talking about how, you know, it's just a great time to be a wrestling fan. And like you said, what's best for business. And you really said it well as well. So, I think that's a great way to end it with our all-out conversation, Queen. It was fantastic. I'm glad I got all these epic thoughts out, my deep thoughts about All Elite Wrestling, that we get to have this time capsule of this great show. And like I said, I think the time capsule is that this will be a moment in time for history where things did change and things we go into a new chapter. You know what? The only thing I wish I had covered with you, I forgot because I was so pumped up about CM Punk. You want to give me your thoughts on the wrestling fashion, the big controversy, CM Punk's wrestling pants really quick before we go?
I'll let him live, honey. He looks good in pants. It's not like Okada. Okada's never allowed to wear pants. CM Punk can.
Yeah. CM Punk, he's got a new chapter of his career coming back after 7 years. Maybe he wants to wear the pants to stand out in this era. Of like, this isn't WWE Punk, this is AEW Punk. So
sure,
I forgot to throw that in there, the wrestling
that's
fashion.
That's right, you got it in on the end.
Yeah, okay, so before we go, thank you so much for being here, Queen, for coming back to the podcast. And before we go, let everybody know where they can find you on social media if you'd like, and what can we look forward to coming up?
Sure, well, first of all, thank you for having me, it's such a great time. Y'all can find me on Twitter at the Queen of NE. Queen's Court Network. I don't have Queen's Court anymore, which is my old show, but Queen's Court Network is hosting the Queen of Pops Experience on Sundays for your listening pleasure. So please come along for that ride. It's watch-alongs, it's banter, argument, and our new segment, Keeping It Real, every couple of weeks. So check us out on your favorite podcast platforms.
I love it. I love it that you're back. I love it that you're doing the watch-alongs again, and that you were able to come back on the show. Thank you for making the time. It was a great chat, and I will definitely be looking forward to the Queen and Pops Experience, because I just want to relive that match listening to your commentary, because it adds another level to loving a match when you love a match already and you get to hear one of your favorite people just enjoying it. So that's pretty cool. That's a different kind of podcast experience. It really is an experience. So
thank you, I'm glad you like it.
All right, Queen, well, Dynamite's about to start. I hope we made it on time, and I just want to say before we go, if anybody's looking for me on social media, you can follow me on Twitter. It's Metal Michael, which is spelled M-I-X-A-E-L. You have the podcast account if you just want to follow that at Call Up Wrestling, and please follow and subscribe to the podcast so you get new episodes. We're back and rolling and big shows coming up. This is a great time to be following the podcast. And please give Miss Queen a follow as well on your favorite podcast platform. So until next time, people, stay strong, stay positive, and stay metal.